it's okay on a day where I'm tripping over the boots. I can't find another sock. The kid's having a meltdown. And I'm going, Lord, it is really hard to mother seven kids. He didn't see me as having a tantrum. He actually just wants to be with me in that moment. So we grieve it. And in the grieving, I think then there is a resurrection. There's a time and a place where God goes, well, that was the dream for your life, but I actually have different dreams and they're better.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Shelby Abbott, and your hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today.
All right, so here's what I'm thinking about today. This thought just came to me. If we had seven kids, would we have survived? Seven kids.
Yeah, I think we have survived. I don't know if we'd still be married.
That's what I wonder. So the laughter you're hearing is the woman who has seven kids, Sarah.
And I'm still married.
Yay!
You're still married.
That's why we have you
and
on.
And I love him, yes.
You love him.
Sarah Haggerty's with us. How many years married?
22, almost 23. You know those years. They just all.
It took a while, right?
It did.
Tell us your family story.
We had many years of infertility after being married. We just assume, like everybody else, you get married, and then when you want to have kids, you have kids. But that wasn't the story for us. And so after we had wanted to adopt, but we thought we'd have biological children first and then adopt. But after many, many, many years of infertility, we started the adoption process.
Now, was infertility a struggle?
Oh, my goodness. One of the biggest struggles of our lives.
Yeah, talk
different
about
for
a little
both
bit.
Of us. I think, you know, speaking to marriage, men carry that different than women do. I think
that creates tension.
Absolutely. I think for us, it actually ended up drawing us closer together because of his personality. The ache for him was watching me. I think he'd always wanted to be a dad, but I think he had just a sense of surety this is going to happen some way. Whereas for me, you know, I'm going to all the baby showers. I'm watching my friends have their first, second, third birthdays with their kids. And I'm feeling this sting like every day.
You're facing it constantly.
Constantly. I mean, it marked my 20s and into my 30s.
And so you decided, well, we've always wanted to adopt.
We've always wanted to. So we went for it and we adopted.
Let me ask this. Before you got to that point, was there a God part of it? A faith part? Was there a loss of faith?
Was there a struggle, a complaining,
lamenting?
I remember sitting at my kitchen table one afternoon and we had built a house and we thought this house would be filled with children and it was filled with guest rooms. And I remember sitting at my kitchen table a lonely day and I opened the Bible and read in the Proverbs, to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. The satiated soul loathes the honeycomb, but to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. And it was a moment, it was like the light shining through the window, like this bitter has the potential for being sweet with my walk with God.
Did you feel it or did you just have to claim that or just
I think it was the
choice.
First time I felt it. Wow. You know, okay. I think I knew in my head, maybe. But this was the years before anybody talked about infertility. I mean, we knew one friend who would walk through it. It just wasn't that prevalent. So I felt very alone. But I think in that moment, it was probably the combination of I felt this is God reaching into my heart saying, this is a moment for you, Sarah. But I also in my mind went, the word's telling me this is terrible, but it actually could be sweet. And so it ended up being a profound walk with God where I went, I'm not getting my dreams. The things I want aren't happening. I'm watching all my friends have one, two, three babies, but God is reaching me. And you know, I say that as a big banner over 10 years, right? Yeah.
That's interesting, though, that moment of this is your moment, Sarah. Of
absolutely.
God saying that. I'm thinking of how many listeners, God saying, this is your moment in the midst of the pain and the heartache.
Right. Which is hard because we get our eyes fixed on when that's over. We just naturally do that. Anybody who's going through something hard right now, subconsciously, you're counting days or months till when it's over. Your eyes are on when this is over. But for me, it felt like God reached into the now. And I knew it wasn't necessarily a promise that it would be over. You know, I remember another instance of being at church, and church was always painful during that time because people are pregnant or carrying their babies. And it just felt like, oh, the reminder. If I went to work, I wasn't around a lot of pregnant people. Mm. And I saw this picture in my mind's eye of the word family nailed to the cross as we're in worship. Mm. And I felt like it was an invitation from the Lord. Would you still love me if I never gave you what you wanted in a family? And it was like a big lump in my throat. No way. I don't want this. Mm. And days of just going, how could I answer that? How will I answer that? But I think because of that, that time of every bitter thing is sweet, I went, you have something for me. Mm-hmm. It might not be family right now, but I'm discovering for myself, God, you have something for me in this loss.
I mean, it sounds like you should write a book on this.
Yeah, I did. Every bitter thing is sweet.
I mean, everything you're saying is the gift of limitations. It the beauty is. Of the boundaries is obviously the title of your book. But
yes. If your newest book.
It's coming out of that, obviously that journey, right?
Well, the irony is, so that was in my 20s, right? Yeah. And then here I am, how many years later, and I have 7 kids and barely enough time to brush my teeth. Right.
Yeah. So and how did that your work? Your house is full.
My house is full. It is loud and messy and I'm organized and quiet.
Yeah, it's really nice and quiet right where we're sitting right now. I can't imagine what's going on in your house.
I know. We're not thinking about that. That's I've gotten some crisis texts already this
morning.
But I
mean, did you start the adoption process? Like, we're done. We're never going to have kids. No. So let's do it this way.
We really, in my heart of hearts, I wanted to hold on to faith that God would heal me. The ironic thing is I felt like God was healing my heart while my body wasn't being healed. Mm. So we walked through the adoption process still asking the Lord to give us biological children. We adopted 2 from Ethiopia and then 2, we actually in Ethiopia, as we were touring the orphanage, there was an older girl who just looked at me with these eyes like, take me home. She was giving us the tour of the orphanage when we were there to pick up our semi-younger children.
How old was she?
She was probably 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And she had these eyes like, I'm not going home with anybody. Will you take me home? Oof. And we came home from Ethiopia after adopting our first 2. And I said to my husband, we have to go back for her. Mm. And it wasn't actually her that we ended up adopting, but we adopted 2 more children that were older. Her face is just burned in my brain. There was little hope for her to be adopted. And I just thought of those older children. And so we went back to Uganda 2 years later and adopted 2 more. Mm.
But then...
several years after that, just it was, you know, a Valentine's Day that I discovered I was pregnant and went, what in the world? Everything just changed.
Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you feel?
I think it felt surreal. I had dreamed about it for so long and then it was finally there and I went, God, you met me when I didn't have this. And there's something about that when the miracle we're waiting on comes and we look back and go, oh, when I didn't have that, God was so near. And it was so personal to me. I wrote letters to my closest friends telling them I was pregnant. I couldn't even tell them. I couldn't even say the words. It felt that private, near. I can't believe all these years you've walked alongside me. I'm just going to put a letter in the mailbox to you because I don't think I could actually verbally tell you.
Really?
God came through this way.
It was that... like close to the soul, it sounds like.
Absolutely. That, you know, and I think we all face this. We have very, I mean, now even in this season, I have these questions of God. I'm on my floor begging God, will you move in this way? All of us have that in some way or another. And the moment where he doesn't come through, like we think, I say that, you know, with air quotes, in some ways, in my mind is maybe just as holy as the moment when he does, but we have tangible evidence when he does come through. Gosh, that feels wholly other.
He always comes through. You're right.
But not in the way that we think.
Exactly.
Yeah. Talk about that. How is it holy when he doesn't? Cause that's the struggle.
Well, and that's really the topic of this book. We fix our eyes on the things we can't have. We just do. It's human nature. It's subtly, it's in the back of our mind. I mean, with 7 kids, I'm walking out the door and I'm old and I'm walking out the door with my little kids.
You are not old.
Well, old to have little children.
It's all relative.
You're right.
Okay, you're older to have,
to have young children. Yeah. I'm walking out the door with them, tripping over boots. We can't find socks. We want to go on this walk where I'm going to get to experience nature and wonder with them. And another boot is lost in the woods somewhere and some kid's crying. And I'm like, I'm too old for this. How are we doing this again? Right? Yeah. Like I am up to my eyeballs in kids. And I can, in my mind's eye, how ironic that all these years after my infertility go, when am I going to come up for air? Yeah. And keep my eyes over the fence line, meaning the fence around my yard. I'm not looking at what's right in front of my yard. I'm looking at the other over the fence. When am I going to get a respite? When am I going to get a break? When are these limitations going to lift? And yet I think there's something that God has for us who are waiting in the waiting. Mm. There's something that God has for us who are limited, whether it be physically or in our marriage or with children or without children or taking care of a sick parent or taking care of a sick kid that isn't, let's grit your teeth till this is over. I actually have words and whispers for you right now when it's not lifting.
You're traveling, you're speaking, you're around women. What do you think some of the main ones are? You named a lot of those.
I think there's a lot of ache in marriages.
Me too.
A lot of ache, and he's not who I thought he was, or this isn't coming together like I thought, or we're not connecting emotionally.
And my
notice
kids.
That was all women saying, he's not who I thought he
well,
was.
Well, she asked women.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, I think men are probably saying
I want to ask you,
I'm not having those conversations with men.
I think your health, kids that have walked away.
The older you get, watching your kids go through the teenage years and beyond, and if they're not walking with the Lord, I think health is a big thing. And that's actually a startling thing, because I think people in my generation, we watched our parents struggle when they got into the older years, but now we're seeing friends in their 30s and even 20s and 40s struggling with health issues that are chronic. That's a big thing.
And you've had a chronic condition.
After I wrote this book, I actually was diagnosed with Lyme disease. And it was so interesting to go back and reread through the book and really wonder, is the message that I wrote in here, is it going to hold true for this?
Mm. And is it for me?
Like, and is it for me?
Yeah, like you're really living it.
I'm living it.
You're in it.
I'm in it. And I read it and felt like, you know what, Lord, that what you're telling me, I think of one phrase I write about in the book, slower still.
Yeah,
which is a phrase that it comes up in my mind. One of my best friends tells it to me often. It is, you know, Jesus' pace was something like, 3 miles an hour or something. And yet we live in this world of optimization and finding hacks. We just move way faster than we even realize we're moving. And yet I think there's something of a whisper from God in our limitations saying, hey, if you slow down and are less productive than you think you need to be, less accomplished than you think you need to be, noticing more gaps in your life than you want to have, you might actually find that my presence is very near in the slower still. And so being diagnosed with Lyme disease, it was like, okay, I'm going to practice this. When I'm in bed or I have to go to bed early or I'm fatigued and I can't do it, we're going on family vacation and mom's upstairs in bed, do I really believe that God likes me? Do I really believe that he has something for my day, or do I need to grit my teeth through this fatigue and wait till it's over so I can really be present to my day?
That's really, I mean, we all face that.
Everywhere.
Even that question, God, do you like me? Like, if you love me, you know, we have all of our whys. Why have you not healed me still? Why are my kids still disobeying and they've walked away? Why is my marriage still? I like your sentence of, will you love me still and follow me if this never happens?
If it never
happens.
So
convicting.
It is. And I think we all would say yes, right, in a heartbeat. But like lived, we maybe wouldn't. Like really deep down, I'm like, gosh, what if you took it all away, God? And that, you know, you say that and it's like, go, 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 you know. But then you, all of us are living small versions of having the Lord delay an answer.
Yeah.
Or having something we desperately want be elusive to us.
But you're right. We have a choice in those moments when we're so desperate, when we can't get out of bed, when we have no answers. We have that choice of, like, I can't do it apart from you, Jesus.
Which is a beautiful thing.
It's beautiful.
That really is the gift in our limitations. You know, we have bought a lie and fed ourselves a lie that we're going to conquer it all. And in many ways, that's why so many of us are tired. We are bone tired because we've been trying to change the world and conquer it all.
I'm tired.
Yes, me too.
Well, that makes three of us.
Right.
Well, I mean, part of me wants to ask you, you know, even hearing that term slower still, when I read it in your book, it made me stop for a second. Then I rushed past it, but no, I'm kidding.
Uh-huh.
It made me stop because I'm like, I don't like it. I want it. But when you open the book with the fence analogy, and I'm like, I like fences to keep people out of my life, but I don't like fences to keep me in. I want to jump over them. I want to crawl. And you talk about at the beginning, you know, the skin marks on your shins as you're crawling over
Absolutely.
The limitations of your life. How do we get to the place, you're there, you've walked through that, of when you feel limited, when God's not letting you jump over that fence, for whatever, it could be physical, it could be just there aren't advancements going on in your life or career or whatever. And the DNA of me, and some of us, the American way, we celebrate it. And as an athlete, you're a runner.
Yeah.
It's like you don't slow down. You just push through. Push through that.
Absolutely.
Point. Don't quit. And if there's a fence, you know, I'm a football coach. Run through it. Don't jump over. But there are times, like you're saying, it's like, no, slower still. It's a limitation. God wants you right where you are. Rest in that. How do you do it if you don't want to do it?
Such a good question. I mean, I think in many ways, God is already doing it for so many of us with our circumstances. We're resenting them. We're wishing they would change. And he's already bringing us there by the circumstances that feel so limiting. I mean, you know, as a runner, I think of I ran a race, or there was a local race in Charlottesville, Virginia that I had placed in. And I mean, this was many years ago when I could actually, like, you know, place in a race. And I wanted to win it the next year. So I got a trainer. I trained to win it. And I all summer long, in 75 degree heat in the mornings, which was pretty cool for the summer.
I know this story. This is fascinating.
It's wild. So 75 degree heat, it's race day. And I know the years, times from years past who, I mean, this is not a race that's making it on anybody's radar. It's just a local race. But I know the times of the winners from the years past. I have my splits on my hand. I know what I need to do to win the race. That race morning, it's 85 degrees, which for a runner, that 10 degree difference is not nothing.
Oh, that's a lot.
I hadn't trained in 85 degrees. We just had an unusually cool summer. And as we're lining up at the starting line, I notice, and there's some chatter, that there's some actually Olympic trialers who are at that race who've never run it before. So I should have known I'm not going to win this race, right? But I didn't believe it. So here I am, gun goes off, and I'm looking at my hand, determined for my splits. This heat is slowing me down, but I'm zeroed in on I am going to get my splits. My splits meaning the time for each mile.
Right.
I'm going to win this race. Not really thinking these women are like so far beyond me. Still trying to keep up with them. My body is giving me all the warning signs to slow down, and I ignore them all, such that I have a heat stroke.
No.
Which psychologically, people who have heat strokes are typically people who push past their limits. They just cannot read what their body's telling them. And it became this picture to me of what we do in our lives. Your tiredness, your migraines, your stomach aches, your panic attacks, they are telling you a story that, and sometimes that's even God reaching into your body. Could it be all the time? I don't know. God is reaching into your body and speaking to you that message of slower still. I think there's a mercy that, like, I hear that too. And I think, how in the world am I going to slow down with seven kids?
That's what I was going to say. The mom's listening. I can't slow down.
There's no way.
Right. You feel that.
Right.
So, but by the way, the dad's feeling the same way. You ladies over here. We do the
My
same
husband
thing.
Feels that too.
Yeah, that's right.
So could it be that the circumstances that we keep trying to push past, the fence line we keep trying to hurdle, is actually God's way of saying slower still? Could it be his way of going, I want you to slow down? Because when we slow, man, there is access to wonder in God. We hear whispers more than we scroll our phone.
I like the whispers. Yeah. God's whispering to us, and we can actually hear him.
Because the noise is quiet. You're in bed sick for a day. Could it be that God's even allowing, you know, I don't want to get into the theology of sickness, but like, could it be that God allows that?
And it always isn't physical. You know, the symptoms aren't always physical. I'm thinking of, there are many times in my life I haven't felt physical symptoms, but I'm irritable. I'm angry. I'm frustrated all the time. You can feel it. You know, that's signs as well. Like, you're yelling at people for what? You know, you're harsh to your wife.
Absolutely.
There's no reason to be harsh. And it's like, you know what? I'm out of control. And God's saying, slow down, slower still. I love that phrase.
One of my best friends, her oldest son was diagnosed with cancer when he was 9. And their world just stopped. Talk about slow down. They're both working. The husband and wife are both working. They have 4 kids. This is their oldest.
What a heartache.
And she said, the only place I could go every single night when he was in the hospital is I would go into the bathroom of the hospital room and I would lay on the floor and cry out to God, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. And she said, his presence wrapped me in a way. She said I was still in it, but I had this comfort in the midst of it. And she said, all I wanted to do is get out of this situation, begging God to heal him. It wasn't looking good, but she's begging God, get me out of this place. And miraculously, this little boy was healed after time. But now when I talk to her, she says, Ann, I miss that place of desperation. She goes, I'm so busy now, flying all over the place. But I was meeting God face to face when I couldn't stand on my own two feet. And that's kind of what you're talking
about.
And
that's ultimately, I mean, those are the stories we need to hear. Because deep down inside, the reason we're killing ourselves is we want a sense of belonging and being known and being seen. But there's another way to get that that isn't achievement and productivity and having all of our goals met and our kids well-behaved. No, not that those things are bad.
Yeah.
But there is something really powerful in the dream that is thwarted and God saying, I just want to hold you.
Yeah.
But we don't really ask to be held when we're accomplishing all our dreams.
We're too busy running.
Yeah, that's
right. We want
right.
the feeling of being held without the pain.
Yeah.
That's exactly
right.
We
just don't want the pain. I mean, when you, and I want to have you talk about the come, die, grieve, live.
I think we Christians are just master pain avoiders. I mean, if we're honest, like we want to do everything.
I think
everything.
The world, everybody
right.
is.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And we just
we
have our
too.
Own flavor of it, right?
Yeah.
As Christians, the world is. And I think there is an invitation with our limitations, not only to name them, because a lot of times we react to them.
Name them.
We resent them. You know, we're snapping at our spouse and our kids, but really underneath it all, we're just frustrated with the things that are limiting us.
Right.
Okay, friend. Come on, Sarah. Name yours.
So, oh,
let's
goodness.
All name our stuff.
I mean, this would take 2 hours. I don't know.
I mean, the stuff right now?
That we feel
well, I mean,
limitations.
I think practically, like, I want my kids to be well-behaved in every scenario. So here we are. I plan this party, and I want it to be beautiful. And then some kid is unraveling. And even though the party is for them, I'm frustrated that they're not receiving it, right?
Yeah.
But we do that.
Yeah. Yes.
We do. Like, why are you human? Can't you see I did this party for you?
Appreciate this.
I mean, my daughter's in the bathroom crying at her birthday party and I'm irritated. Like, don't you see all I did for you? I think we live that way. So I think the first thing is actually just naming our limitations, because a lot of times they have a power over us and we don't really know it because we haven't named them.
Have you done that with your husband?
Naming the limitations?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, bless
his soul. I thought
you were
asking, is her husband named limitation?
Oh. But like, what do you think he would typically say?
So his answer is, you know, in a business setting, we have 7 kids, right? We've already hovered around that. 4 of ours have been through pretty significant trauma. My husband's a business owner. There's a ton of no's he has to say in his professional life in order to be present to our private life. And he feels it. Like he'll get in a room with a bunch of guys who are in similar, you know, who are CEOs of their companies also. And he's going, if I had 10 more hours, this is what I could give. He feels that.
Yeah.
There are days where he's can't go to meetings because there's certain things happening in our home that he's got to tend to. Mm. It's really present for him. I mean, I would say that's probably his major limitation.
Okay, so we're naming our limitations.
We name them. But then I think the other step is this, you know, we as pain avoiders, we actually give ourselves permission to grieve them. Mm. And that can feel really counter and wrong to us. I think we want to skip steps and tell ourselves the good news at the end of it. When in reality, God gave us lanes for our emotions in the Psalms. Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? The exact words that Jesus used on the cross. There was a Friday death and a Saturday darkness before Sunday's resurrection. So there's something powerful to, I think, taking that and applying it to our own lives, going, there are things that God is inviting me to die to if we lose our lives for him. There's things he's inviting me to die to, not just to keep clinging to, interceding for, they've got to change, maybe just accept they're not changing.
Oh, this is so true for marriage too.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're just living for the day he will change or come to know Jesus or lead in the way that we hope.
Sending
or,
out the crisis prayer text,
yes.
Pray for my husband, X, Y, Z. And how many years in? Some of those things are never going to change.
And your question at the beginning, will you still love Jesus, God?
If they never do.
Yes.
And will I still love him?
Exactly. That's
if he's
big
still
question.
Doing that thing that drives me crazy, and he knows it. We've talked about this 267 times, and you don't know.
Yeah.
Oh shoot! Now you remember. Can I accept that this is the whole package? Mm. This is who I'm. You know, in a similar way in my own life, in marriage and also separate from marriage, can I accept those things? Which I think in some ways is Holy Saturday, right? Like this, I'm dying to them. Can I grieve them on that day? Can I grieve them for a period of time and go, this is hard? I think sometimes we don't want to do that because we feel like we're just little kids throwing tantrums, and God knows our heart. So it's okay on a day where I'm tripping over the boots, I can't find another sock, the kid's having a meltdown, and I'm going, Lord, it is really hard to mother seven kids. Mm. He doesn't see me as having a tantrum. He actually just wants to be with me in that moment. So we grieve it. And in the grieving, I think then there is a resurrection. Mm. There's a time and a place where God goes, well, that was the dream for your life, but I actually have different dreams and they're better.
I was going to say, and they're better.
They are better.
I'm so glad that God didn't listen to some of the dreams that I had that I thought would fill me. Because God's dreams are way, way better. But in the midst of that, we walked some hard spots, you know, with
absolutely.
Our marriage and
yes.
with things. But that piece of continually surrendering it and laying it down, that's not
and
easy.
Grieving it with him.
And grieving it.
You know, I think about our marriage. We always say we fell in love 10 years after being married, which actually feels very true. And I look at I think 2 years in, I'm like, who did I marry? Like, what in the world? We are oil and water. How did I not know this? Like, I was starry-eyed and I did not realize that we are absolute opposites. And so here I am praying, like, you know, change him. And now I look all these years later and lots of marriage counseling later, I look and I'm like, oh, those things I wanted to change, I actually desperately needed.
That's so funny because our seminary professor who mentored us, he and his wife, I remember him saying, what are the favorite, this is year one of marriage. Tell me the favorite things about Dave. I'm like, I love that he's so laid back. 10 years later, I saw him again. What are the things that like are frustrating for you in your marriage? I said, he's so laid back. I can hardly stand it. And so now after 43 years, I'm back to, I love that about him.
Isn't that wild?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. So my marriage is this picture of, and really, I mean, we duked it out. Like it was hard years in marriage, committed, but very hard. And I look now and I'm like, I had no idea how much I needed that man and his personality and all those quirks and all those things that rubbed me the wrong way.
Yes.
I would not be who I am today without him. Mm. And I even think of, you know, in our family with the challenges with our children, my husband says to me often, you would not be the Sarah you are today without those kids.
Because they've shaped you.
They have shaped you.
Yeah.
You thought you were going to change the world and they changed you.
I say that to every young mom. Oh, you think you're going to change them? God's going to use them to shape you in a magnificent way if you'll let him.
That's so right.
We're going to hear more in just a second from Dave with some encouragement on how to practically apply what we've heard today. But first, limitations to me have always felt like something I've needed to move past or kind of bust through. Very rarely have I considered that the boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places, and God has put them there for the purpose of allowing me to flourish within them. Not always looking for ways to break them down and move beyond them. I'm Shelby Abbott, and you've been listening to Dave and Ann Wilson with Sarah Haggerty on Family Life Today. I've loved this conversation, and Sarah has written a book that is directly related to this conversation. It's called The Gift of Limitation, Finding Beauty in the Boundaries. Full disclosure, I'm actually reading this book right now, and it is a really challenging and very helpful book for someone specifically like me. And if you're like me, you have trouble with the limitations. You have trouble with looking at the fences in your life and longing for something different than what you're currently experiencing. It's a narrative-driven book, and Sarah shares a lot of stories in it about her own personal experiences, but also gives great and godly insight on how to appropriately look at your limitations and really be appreciative of how God has ordered your life. So you can get your copy right now by going to the show notes at familylifetoday.com. Or you can give us a call at 800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. It is officially the month of May. As of yesterday, it was May 1st. Today is May 2nd. And that means that when you partner with Family Life, when you become a Family Life partner, we have had some very generous donors give to the Ministry of Family Life to make it that. So when you give any amount, it is going to be matched dollar for dollar up to $500,000. That means if you give a gift of $100, for example, it is actually going to be made into $200. That means if you become a monthly partner and give $50 a month for a whole year, it's actually going to be $100 a month. It's a beautiful opportunity to make your donation double and have two times the impact. So you can find out more about becoming a monthly partner in the show notes at familylifetoday.com. Now, when you do give, we're going to send you, as a thank you, a book by Chris and Elizabeth McKinney called Neighborhoods Reimagined. It's just a small way of saying thank you to you for partnering with us in the Ministry of Family Life and making this ministry possible to help reach more families and marriages. Again, you can find out more by going online to familylifetoday.com. And if you know anyone who needs to hear conversations like the one you heard today, would you share this episode of Family Life Today from wherever you get your podcasts? And while you're there, it could really help others learn more about the Ministry of Family Life Today by leaving us a review. All right, now let's hear more from Dave Wilson about some practical ways to apply exactly what you've heard today.
Yeah, I think as we wrap, I would say, I don't think I've ever named the limitations. Mm-hmm. I would encourage a listener to take a moment, be still, slower still, get out your phone or whatever you're going to use to do it. Maybe a piece of paper, because your phone will probably have a text come in, an email, and your mind will rush off. But just sort of get quiet and say, what are the things I really wanted that aren't ever going to happen? And that's okay. Because that's a hard, that's a, almost a courageous thing. Because even at this age, they're still like, oh, I can still. And it's like, no, those dreams aren't, they weren't even good dreams. But they, God put a fence there and said, no, it's better that you don't have that. And name that. And
I like the naming it.
You know, and then live free in it. I don't know what that would look like, but that'd be a healthy exercise.
Yeah, I like that. And I also like the idea of saying to God, even if you don't change the situation, I will love you. I will follow you. I will trust you. I might not feel like it, but I will be obedient and follow you anywhere you take me. Those are hard things to say. Very hard.
Now, tomorrow, what's the point in finding the significance of grieving our limitations and finding purpose in difficult situations? Well, Sarah Haggerty is back with David Ann Wilson to talk about just that. We hope you'll join us tomorrow. On behalf of David Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.